Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Ed and Chris Sherwood as we talk about UFOs, close encounters of the fifth kind, and also crop formations. All that is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Ed and Chris Sherwood with us. Your calls as well. Ed and Chris, back to UFOs for a moment before we go to the calls. What would close encounters of the sixth kind be? We already know now what five would be. What do you think?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask. I've often had my own little categorization after five, and that is you basically kind of go back to one, because you could have initiate a sighting, but what you experience could be a close encounter of the first kind, or it could be a close encounter of the second kind, or the third kind. Or it could be, you know, if third kind is to witness one or more being, fourth kind, in my definition, has always been to have more than one third kind experience. It could be positive, it could be negative, but the fourth kind of encounters is really continued or multiple third kind encounters. So when you get to fifth kind, and for example, you go to a location where there's no UFO sightings occurring, and you sit on a hill quietly or somewhere discreet, alone or with a small group of people, respectfully doing this in a psycho-spiritual way, you send out your mental invitation, and you do your earth healing meditation, and then you have a sighting. Well, you know, you could have a sighting where an object just appears and is there for a short period of time and disappears or leaves. You could have a close encounter of the first kind. You could do that and have a camera nearby, and because you ask for permission first, when you go to reach for that camera, the object doesn't just disappear or zip away and film something. So then you had a close encounter of the second kind. All of these different types of encounter also are, in my experience, you go through it in a process kind of way, unless you are unfortunate enough to cross the paths of beings that are indifferent and don't care of how you experience thing. But those that are more advanced psycho-spiritually and do care, they interaction with them is very much a process. And although there may be moments where you feel fear, if you examine that, as I did in my life, in the instances where I felt great fear at having a being just feet from me, after the event, I realized that I really didn't have any reason to be afraid. It was imagined. It was an instinctual reaction because of the unfamiliarity of it, the suddenness of it, and the strangeness of it. But really, I imagined the worst. You know, I reacted as you do when you're afraid. And when I learned to overcome my fear, and on YouTube, if people go to youtube.com/circlescribe, and that's one word, not two words, you'll find a series of videos that I posted up there, 1 to 8, from a talk I gave 14 years ago, where I outline how I learned to overcome my fear in the contact experience, because it really does condition and inhibit just how far you can go with contact. Obviously, once you overcome your fear or you learn to be fearless, you learn to not just believe in what your fearful thinking is telling you, but you observe it, you question it, then you can have much more interactive experiences. But, you know, it all depends on, I guess, the purpose behind the interaction. With myself, I have experienced close encounters of the third kind 7 times. 4 of those occasions were with the same being. And if I add up the from those 4 occasions, just how much the being said to me, it was very, very little. But what it did say, it never said anything about itself, never told me its name, where it comes from, how it lives. All it asked me each time was, do you remember, look at yourself, understand who you are, not just as a human being, but as a conscious energy life form. Understand you have a soul, as does everybody, as does every self-aware thinking intelligent life form, including extraterrestrial life forms, self-aware thinking beings. And I think that's the great equalizer in a way, because irrespective of where they come from, why they're here, how much technology they have, how much psychic abilities they have, at the end of the day, they are born as we are of this creation, I feel, in my view. We are sparks and particles of this psychokinetic, physical, non-physical universe.
I got to tell you, Ed, you bring a very different, refreshing dimension to this. You both do. Let's go to the calls. East of the Rockies, Ashland, Kentucky, we go. Aaron, you'll be the first. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. All is well.
Hi, Aaron.
How you doing? Hi to your guest there, too. I had a question. You were talking earlier there that you had some reincarnation experiences, kind of like shown to you again there. I just kind of wonder if you can go into just a little bit more detail, maybe who you were or something like that. That'd be kind of interesting to hear your maybe who you were, you know, back in past lives. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate the question. The first encounter I had, the being showed me things at the age of 9 that pertained strictly to this lifetime. And I saw things that were future events in this lifetime, which as a 9-year-old child, I did have difficulty understanding. Like the fact that I would meet and marry a blonde American woman from the West Coast. When I was 9 years old, if you said to me, you're going to meet and marry a blonde American from the West Coast, I'd have a hard time understanding all of that, but I would get the gist of it. And honestly, when I learned that from my experience, I rejected it for many years. And I didn't want that to be so because, you know, when you see things that are supposed to be events or facts ahead of you, you start wondering just how much free will you have. But really, it's just a case of you peered into a little piece. You put a spotlight on, or a spotlight was triggered for you to see. And so in the first encounter, when the being said, do you remember, I saw things to do with my life. And as I've lived this life, it hasn't all been shown to me. There are things I don't know happening all the time, going to happen. But there are other things that I did see. And some of those things I have, stayed with me vividly. Other things are triggered when I experience them. It's strange. It's like little things in the environment can just trigger a memory and, you know, it can take me right back. But in the second encounter I had where I met the same being, this time I actually was on board the object that this being came in to my parents' house. It was an onboard encounter. And he asked me again. He took me to a room and lit all around. And there was like a passageway into a little, like kind of a hall between two rooms. And there was an inset, what looked like a bed kind of inset on the floor in the wall. And he pointed down to that and he said, do you remember? And when he said that, I had the same thing, all the flood of mental images, except they did not pertain to my life in this life. They pertained to other lives that I've lived as a human being, and they also included a life that I've lived as an extraterrestrial being. Now, when I say I saw that, I didn't see every detail. I didn't see every fact or every piece of information. But I saw what I did see to do with the extraterrestrial life, which for many years I couldn't talk about. I couldn't even mention it to anyone without crying because it was just too emotional, too upsetting to me. It was because when the being said, do you remember? And I had this remembering, I saw myself dying on this bed, if you could call it that, and that this being who was with me knew me, and I'd known him. And that the memory I had was that I was dying and that I would soon be leaving my body and that this would be the last time that I would be with this being in physical form and I would be moving on as a soul. And that was very upsetting to me. And strangely enough, when I had that confronted in this experience to me, it you know, for years and years, I couldn't talk about it, and I wouldn't talk about it. I mention it in the series of YouTube, the 1 to 8 parts. I go into quite a lot of my early encounter experiences and things I learned from them. But I don't really want to say who I was as a name, because I feel that we've all lived past lives, every one of us, and that it's a function of consciousness that we forget. We need to forget the details of all of our previous soul life tracks, because if we didn't forget them, we wouldn't be able to function as finite beings in this body, in this time. You know, you'd have a hard time making sense of things. But there are laws and forces of consciousness and things that you can access in a superconscious way. And when there's a need, when there's a necessity to know something, you know, you might be questioning who you are. You might be wondering, or there might be things happening around you, external from you, like meaningful synchronous things that keep saying certain things for you to look at or look into. And I feel that we have all lived multiple lives, but we have forgotten most of those, what those lives were. That we might remember fragments of those lives if it's necessary. We might get a hint or a feeling. We might have more than that. But to know that is important in knowing that we are energy beings, and it's the energy of our consciousness that really survives physical death. And physical death is not an end to our consciousness. Just like sleep at nighttime, when we fall asleep, we become unconscious to the world around us, physical world around us. It's like we die every night. And what happens? Our consciousness doesn't die. It continues. Even our thinking continues. You know, we go through that state, that moment where you can't quite stay awake. You fall asleep, and that there's a little moment where it's very difficult to observe exactly what happens with your thoughts while you're thinking. But I spent a long time as a teen trying to catch this moment and observe what happened, and eventually I did, and noticed how when we think as we're sleeping, it's not uncommon for our thoughts to become our dream, and our dream to become three-dimensional, and our dream to become so real to us because we're giving all our attention to it that it is really not much different from the physical waking world that we are in ordinarily, otherwise. And what was I going to say?
Okay, while you're pondering, let's take another call, okay?
Sure, sorry.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Let's go to California. Jeremy, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jeremy.
How are you doing, Mr. Murray? It's a
good
pleasure to talk to you. I listen to you every night.
Thank you.
Hi, Jeremy.
So the thing I wanted to say was I wanted to talk about Area 51. I don't know if that's out of topic or not. But
well, we'll find out. Any of you have any exposure to that, Ed, Chris?
Not directly, no.
Well, we're definitely aware.
We're familiar, obviously.
Sure.
As much as there's probably
something's going on over there.
Definitely.
That and many other places. I think many other places, too, most surely.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to throw in just the fact that before I moved here 14 years ago, I lived in the heart of Crop Circle Country and in the place where many formations and many UFO sightings have occurred, both of the extraterrestrial type and the ball plasma type. You typically see the military response very quickly, usually within minutes. And, you know, I've observed more than 100 objects in one valley alone of the two different types of UFO that I've mentioned, plasma and extraterrestrial technology, and on many occasions seen multiple helicopters just heading straight for them as soon as they materialize or appear in the landscape. So, you know, the military intelligence community is, a branch of it at least, is fully aware of these phenomena, has at least a unit, probably every country has, that responds to these things, not all, but certainly when they're in or near sensitive areas, and they monitor it. And I think overall, they probably they may know things more than some things more than most of us, because they have hardware or they have, again, you know, vaults of camera footage and things that you just never see. But at the same time, I still think, though, the military scratching their heads at times and just as wondering as many other people, civilian people, are wondering as to, you know, where they come from, why they're here, etc.
All right, let's go to Colorado. Joe, first-time caller. Go ahead, Joe.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I wanted to ask your guests, going back a little bit in the show, when you were talking about the hoaxsters, you know, I'm a friend of Simeon Hine and Jay Widener and Paula Harris and everything, and I interviewed Simeon on my show the other day, and we talked about the hoaxsters, the so-called hoaxsters, right? Mm-hmm. And he says that, you know, he says he knows a lot of them. He's been researching it for 15 or more years now. He says he knows a lot of them, and they're not hoaxsters. They don't have ill intentions. They're like, a lot of them are like parts of druidic groups, you know, and different spiritual groups. They feel that the crop circles, like mandalas, you know, have positive effects on human consciousness. And Ron Russell was saying the same thing. And it actually helps the crops, and it has all kinds of anomalous effects that they felt were beneficial, and that these people were actually, you know, trying to do it as a service, really, to humanity.
I think probably think they're doing the right thing, Ed.
Well, they're not doing a service when they're doing it deceptively.
And when they're vandalizing farmers' field without permission.
Yeah,
and then others, of course, are just doing it as frauds, no doubt.
Well, you know, for a long time, in the early years, and that's what many of these people were saying openly to people like myself and others who were doing the research, was that they were trying to test the ability of so-called researchers to discern non-man-made from man-made.
Mm-hmm.
Some, yes, were pranking, but the majority had a bit more interest in going out and challenging people to really tell the difference. And they weren't calling themselves land artists back then. And they weren't trying to associate themselves as such. But as years have gone on, we've noticed almost every single researcher we have known at some point, I mean, we too have had moments ourselves where you're confronted with a formation that you cannot tell just by looking at it, or even maybe from a little bit of information, other information that comes forward. You can't tell whether it's man-made or not. So what we do is we put it in an unknown box until there's more information to indicate whether it's one or the other. It's really important to discern, because yes, you can make formations mechanically. You can do sacred geometry, and because of creating a sacred shape, you are also generating an energy form. You can do this in a landscape where the feng shui is enhanced and put it on a ley line crossing point and amplify energy at that place, or the energy will be amplified naturally at times at that place, and do a meditation and have that amplified. But the trouble is...
Let's finish up right there when we come back. Our best to Casey Kasem, by the way, who has announced his final sign-off. Some of his programs will still originate in the syndicated form, but in terms of Casey's live programs, he has signed off, ending it, of course, with his famous phrase, I've ended my show with since 1970, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. He's a dear friend of the network and a dear personal friend of mine, Casey Kasem. Best wishes, Casey, to you and your family and everything you do. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls with Ed and Chris Sherwood. And I want you to know that Eric Pearl joins us on our next Coast to Coast show, The Living Matrix, The Science of Healing. All that on Coast to Coast AM. Ed, I'll let you wrap up on the comments you were making about hoaxers, and then we'll go on to final calls. Go ahead.
Sure. we call them deceptive human circle makers because most of what they do has some form of deception in it, from making formations illegally on in farmers' fields, or going out and making formations that maybe they paid the farmer to make, but they didn't make it clear to other people coming in to see their works that these were man-made formations. So they perpetuate a mystery around their creation by the fact that a lot of what they do is done illegally and that they cannot come forward and say so. They have said, as an excuse in many occasions, that that's because they want to, they're artists and they don't want to sign their work. Well, what they've done for the most part has been done illegally, so that's why they don't want to sign their work. But also, if it was done honestly, if a group of people went out and made a formation that had sacred geometry in it, and they wanted to do a psycho-spiritual activity, and it was done respectful to the farmer.
Which people do on occasion, we must say.
Sure.
Your caller had a point there, but not that often.
Yes, most are not done that way. And also, we've noticed over the years how many researchers have changed their tune, and how we think that when many people realized that they couldn't identify all the formations or say certain formations as being man-made, when they became confused by the origin of a formation, and then they found that it was well-made, but it was very likely man-made, or it was man-made, then that threw doubt on much more. And because right from the beginning, we placed a lot of importance on trying to identify the authenticity, the origin. And if we couldn't tell, we put it in an unknown box for later on for more investigation. But each year, from 1980 to 2001, there were formations that, with their evidence, clearly indicated that they were non-man-made, and there were many, many formations where the physical evidence clearly indicated they were, and other things indicated that they were man-made. Now, we noticed after a while that many researchers started to say in the end that, well, it doesn't matter whether they're man-made or not. It's all art. It's all magical. It all affects you. Well, we have to really strongly disagree with that, because it really does matter whether they're non-man-made or not, because if you have a non-human intelligence communicating in the most incredible ways that we have witnessed in the fields for many years, in formations that teach you things that have so much to convey and are on a level way above any attempts of any human-made formations, it's almost an insult, irrespective of whether you think that it's extraterrestrially made or it's made by a supernatural source of intelligence, to lower that down to, oh, it's not important, it's no more important than a man-made formation, is just ridiculous. But at the same token, that's not to discard that in man-made formations, if you bring human beings to the site, you're bringing the energy of their consciousness. If you bring the energy of consciousness, you're bringing the energy of people's emotions, their expectations, their thoughts. And that energy can co-manifest parapsychological phenomena. Mm-hmm. So you can even have events occurring in proximity to man-made formations. But that's because you're bringing human consciousness there.
Okay, let's go to Jesse in California. You're on with Ed and Chris Sherwood. Hey, Jesse.
Hello. I'm going to make this short because it's a lot of information. It said that the New World Order is planning to use a fake alien invasion to bring about their global government. S.D. Rockefeller, Supreme David Rockefeller, is 34 years old. And he's most well-known for his work in artificial intelligence and global currency. And he set up the special drawing rights and also the Asian currency unit and the allied unit. He believes himself to be the redeemed Lucifer of the Urantia book. Mm-hmm. And he claims that instead of destroying the earth, he's going to save mankind by creating this global government, and that there's a race of aliens coming that is unpleased with the evolution of mankind. They're going to destroy humanity, but through creating a one-world government with a one dictator, he can clean up humanity and society and save mankind from their destruction of this other race. I wanted to know if you've heard of Supreme David Rockefeller, and if that sounds like what the message was saying in the crop circle that appeared outside of the radio telescope, the one about the Great Deception.
Yes, that to us was another clear man-made formation. So to us, the message of whatever was attempted to be put in there was man-made and just not important. I have heard of the little bit of the one world order type thing you mentioned. In fact, I heard that more than 15 years ago from people, certain people saying the same thing. And I feel like, you know, there's many things happening in the world that we're all not aware of going on all the time. And maybe some of this is happening. But there's also a lot of fear in the world of things happening, a lot of imagined things happening. And I don't feel at all that we are in any imminent danger or threat to be invaded by any alien civilizations. There's more than one out there, and there also include civilizations out there that are equally, if not more so, technological than any species coming here with malintent or, let's say, not so compassionate feelings towards humanity. And they surely would not allow the Genesis Project of this planet to be just drastically changed by their interference. However, though, I do feel, again, I speak mostly from my own experience, that though there may be civilizations, evolved beings that have been here for a long time, in a way, keeping the nursery, humanity and planet Earth, the Genesis Project, going and tweaking here and there, interacting here and there, almost like occasional gardeners. But despite that, there are some that get through from time to time, perhaps to awaken humanity to the fact that the universe is somewhat like the Earth, and they're all different levels of, they're beings on different levels of self-knowledge and development, and we need to choose who we want to interact with. And if we have not so clear intentions ourselves, or we have negative intentions ourselves, then if we interact with any kind, we will most likely be attracting those like ourselves. So if we want to eventually have contact, communication, interaction with benevolent extraterrestrial civilizations, then we need to adopt things, do things which would attract that type of intelligence. And I think, you know, a question I was asked, I've been asked through the years occasionally, is how can you tell the difference between a civilization that comes with love and one that comes to control or dominate?
And that should be easy, though.
Right, exactly. Those that come to control, even if they mask it, hide it, dress it up as something else, eventually they will show it. And that's when you'll know that you are with the wrong kind. So before that point, it's important to question all the time the experience that you're having. And to remember, too, which I feel very important, is that we're all cosmic beings. Even if you're a human being in this lifetime and you're at the mercy of a gray that intrudes in your life and takes control and does some things, you are a cosmic being. You're a particle of the great creation, and you have rights, and you can assert them psychically.
Okay, let's go now to some more final callers. We'll go to Maggie in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Are they located under aquifers? And do you think that they're trying to teach us to communicate more collectively and telepathically?
Who do you mean by they? You mean
the crops, the manifestation of the crop circle.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, yes, there has been the aquifer connection has been studied, and we definitely believe that there is a connection between underground water and the ability for the planetary forces that are involved in the creation of and manifestation of these phenomena. Water is an essential
element.
Element, yes.
In the physics of the process.
Yeah, and that study has been done, begun years ago. I'm sorry, I don't remember the second part of your question.
The second part is, might they be trying to teach us to communicate more collectively and telepathically?
Well, that's certainly something that can be learned.
Yes.
We feel from this, when you recognize that it is, in a way, a collective consciousness phenomena. I mean,
yes.
It's not simply that we're creating it from our consciousness. We're not willing this to occur, but it is like a global poltergeist that is being manifested partly by the energy of our collective mind, our energy of our deep concerns, the things we need to bring into our conscious mind. I feel that life gives us lots of signs, indications about our lives, whether we're living them correctly or not. You know, our bodies tells us things, our environment tells us things, if you're sensitive to signs and that. Most of the way the collective universe, infinite mind universe, communicates to each of us individually is through natural signs. However, there are times when natural is not enough. The being doesn't get it. And it seems that that's when you need to have it given to you supernaturally or parapsychologically in the form of phenomena. And ordinary poltergeist phenomena, for example, is very expressive of underlying emotional issues that usually an individual needs to resolve. Well, imagine that being a collective situation, i.e. a planet with 6 billion people who in their deep unconscious mind or even subconscious mind or conscious mind, but collectively, are concerned about what we're doing to the planet. How long can we carry on this way? Is it going to get worse?
Consciousness raising is part of the purpose and the message of that process.
Very much.
Any tie-ins to 2012 with any of this that you're working on?
Well, we don't know for sure if any major thing will happen on 2012, although a lot of people suspect so the energy of that expectation might do something.
Yeah, definitely.
But we do feel, though, that the world's different prophecies have all been accurate. And though what they are pointing to might still yet be fully unknown. So 2012, it's a prophecy of the Maya, and they got one prophecy bang on July 11th, 1991, when they said that when the sixth sun... when the total solar eclipse occurs, which did in July 11th, 91, the beings that came from the stars that taught them civilization hundreds of years ago would return, and they did. As a total solar eclipse occurred over Mexico City and Mexico, UFOs appeared over Mexico City and other cities simultaneously during the eclipse, fulfilling that prophecy. In fact, it's the only prophecy I know in the world, the Mayan prophecy, where it speaks of the return of the beings from the stars and gives a date and a time. And it was fulfilled. It wasn't fulfilled like an Independence Day with great big motherships and scaring everyone to death. It was small objects just parked themselves over dense populated areas, cities, for a period of time, and then they left. And I feel that down the road, this is probably, I think, something that we're going to experience on a global scale.
It's continued in Mexico since then, I might add.
That's right. And exponentially.
Yes.
But globally, I feel like, just like the being asked me when I was 9 years old, do you remember? I feel that in many ways, a lot of the UFO sightings worldwide are asking us collectively, do you remember? Do you remember you're not alone? Do you remember you lived many lives? This is your current human life. But your soul is on a journey towards returning to its source, and you will live many lives and maybe even extraterrestrial ones. And this is all part of waking us up.
I think so. We might have time for one more quick call, just about a minute left. Let's go to Bill in Alaska. Bill, real quickly, go ahead.
Hello, George, and your guests, Ed and Chris. I'm in
Hi, Bill.
Alaska, sitting here off Sterling. I've seen a lot of anomalies here, explosions in the sky, et cetera. But I was wondering, most definitely, is are these aliens, you guys see, elongated due to the lack of gravity? And also, are there UFO crafts that you can only see with, through your camera? Is that because they're inflatable and deflatable?
So what was the second thing you said again?
These anomalies that you guys, you only see through the camera?
Yeah.
Are they? Is that because, I mean, you know...
No, that's because they
just
are,
a minute left. Go ahead.
They're oscillating at a frequency that the human eye in an ordinary state of consciousness can't see. But if you alter your consciousness, you'll find that you can see through your eyes and see things in infrared. You know, science will say you can't see infrared, can't see ultraviolet. Well, that's not true.
And it's photographable, too. You can photograph
yes,
into infrared.
You can photograph
you can see
it.
What Ed can see and others can't.
Right. And if the first part of what you said...
We won't have time for that anyways, Ed.
Oh,
I want to thank both of you for being on the program. Give us your websites, would you?
Thank you, George, for having us.
Thank you so much. Our website is cropcircleanswers.com, and our expanding YouTube presence, which we intend to post a lot more videos, so do please watch that space, is youtube.com/circlescribe. One word.
Good to have both of you back again on Coast to Coast. Ed and Chris Sherwood. For Jason Bowers, Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.